My new book, Facts That Aren't True, is out now. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions. This is kind of, we typically call this a shifting of a burden of proof. So you don't get to say, well, what proof that it didn't happen do you have? Because we could we could just then adopt like every single imaginable claim and then claim that they are somehow substantiated by the lack of evidence against them. And that's just not reasonable. That's an argument for Russell's teapot and leprechauns and all kinds of other stupid things.
But I mean, there's only two options. Either this was all created or it wasn't, you know? It's not like there's a bunch of multiple different options. It's one or the other.
That's basically true, but creation doesn't entail one kind of creation. People pretend that they kind of give this false dichotomy, almost like... what's it called? Pascal's Wager, where it's like, well, either the afterlife I believe in exists or no afterlife exists. Mm. And that doesn't follow either.
I mean, for me personally, I look at, you know, science tells us that it was all random chance that the Earth is able to sustain life, you know?
No, not really random chance at all.
Well, it was, because we're the only, you know, for as far as we can tell, there's no other life out there. It's the only time it's happened.
So we haven't looked for life anywhere.
Not big. Like, we haven't looked at all, basically. Yeah, I agree. But to the best of our knowledge, from what we can see, there isn't at least any intelligent life or life out there yet. You know, maybe there is there to be found. I mean, I believe that there is other life, but, you know, all the small little intricacies in, whether it be how far away the Earth is from the sun, you know, what's the term that they use?
The Goldilocks zone? The Goldilocks zone is absolutely enormous. People pretend that it's
compared to the scope of the universe. It's not.
Well, that's completely irrelevant. If the sun and Earth were anywhere in the universe, but at a set distance that works for life, then it wouldn't matter where we are in the universe. That doesn't matter at all.
No, there's some very small margins that you know, if it was any different,
no,
there would be no life here.
No, that's just not the case at all. The temperatures on Earth, you can find life in temperatures north of, do you use Celsius where you're from?
Yes.
So I'm not exactly sure, but it's going to be north of 40 Celsius and south of around negative 100 Celsius. We find life across those ranges of temperatures. But we also know that if Mars hadn't lost its magnetic field, Mars would almost certainly still have like a water cycle on its planet. And so that doesn't mean that life would have evolved on Mars, but it could have evolved on Mars. So these people, the idea that there are strict parameters for life is just really is not the case. Now, if you want to make the argument for intelligent life, then that probably would be more strict.
But again, you know, there's absolutely no evidence for any other life outside of this planet.
So the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. We have not looked, and so we can't conclude that there is no evidence. That's not the case. You can't say that there isn't something when you haven't looked.
There's currently no evidence.
I don't exactly know what you mean by that. We don't know, but to say that there is no evidence, that is what that means, but in a very important sense, that's also not what that means. It's an analogy that gets commonly replayed is go to the ocean and take a scoop of water and then conclude that there are no blue whales. That wouldn't be appropriate.
No, it wouldn't, you know, but But I mean, if you use that same analogy, you know, if you went into the ocean looking for fish, and, you know, yeah, you only swam 10 meters and you didn't see any fish. Sure, that doesn't mean that fish don't exist. Yep. But in a world, let's imagine a world where that, before this, no one had ever seen a fish before, it would leave you to believe, like, okay, well, for now, as far as we have looked, there are no fish.
That's possibly...
So it's the same thing with
space. That could be the case. If somebody told you, there is a thing called fish, and nobody in the world knows that there's a thing, have ever heard of a thing called fish, and you don't have one to show them, then they could say, yeah, there's no evidence of this, I guess. Yeah. And this all started with creationism. So when I look around, what does a universe that is created versus uncreated look like? Well, I mean, there are attempts to make arguments, but I think that they're all pretty weak.
I mean, to me, a universe that's been created is I mean, we live, you know, humans have existed on this planet and only ever existed on this planet, again, to the best of our knowledge. And everything on this planet perfectly supports, it's a system that perfectly supports human and other life.
That's just so, well, that's almost the case.
To me, that's just creation.
But that doesn't really, so if you were going to, create a zoo to host animal life, or your own like a dome that creates super life, would you set it up so that at random intervals, volcanic eruptions and floods, and meteor strikes and all kinds of catastrophes nearly wipe out everything in there? Because I don't think you would.
Me personally, no. If I was trying to make a zoo, but that's not a good analogy for the creation.
No,
it's
an excellent analogy, because if you did do that, and then somebody else built an identical zoo, dome, whatever, and they didn't include those features in it, objective bystanders would take a look at these, and they would conclude that you are a really either terrible designer or some sort of sadist or something like that.
Right. So you think because there's natural disasters, or basically, you're basically using the, if bad things happen, there can't be a God.
No, I'm not. I think that the problem of evil is maybe the best argument against the existence of a particular variety of God. But what I'm really just arguing that, no, things are not designed to the extent that you think it does. I mean, like, imagine if, like, we don't design products that are single-use. Well, okay, that's not true. We do design single-use products, like stamps, or like buzz balls, right? That's a single-use product. That's because it's very cheap to do so, and there can be many other reasons. But imagine a more important thing, like a car. Imagine the only way we made cars was the car would literally fall apart after you drove it 100 miles. You know, we would say these are not good cars. Now, life, you have to remember that we're incredibly biased because we are living organisms. And life is very complex, and it works in fascinating ways. But it's the way that life is subject to the mercy of nature, and the way life really actually barely clings to an existence here on Earth, is, I don't think that that's good evidence of design. Like, for example, in order to make a baby, a guy needs to produce like 100 million sperm per ejaculation. And I was like, wait a minute, I thought we were created so that life was, like, life is kind of the point, and procreating that life was kind of the point. Why on earth do it this way? Well, when you look at it in terms of just a pure naturalistic sense, genetic recombination, which produces genetic variation, which is good for survival, it's kind of the only way that life can barely scrape by, then that does make more sense. So to summarize my little rant here, life actually barely scrapes by on this planet.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. 100%. And
okay, you know, well, I don't think that we have strong evidence that it was designed for life then.
No, but that's very weak evidence that it wasn't designed. It's just saying that life is hard and there's all these, and it's not a perfect creation, you know, not every animal and humans living in utopia and
reproduction. I'm not asking for utopia. Not even
close.
Well,
you're saying, you know, oh, well, life scrapes by, there's all these natural disasters, and reproduction isn't exactly the most seamless way of making life reproduce. If you want to go back to as humans, we are creators. We create things. Imagine, let's for argument's sake, let's say aliens are real. And at some point, humans have been wiped out. There's no more humans left, and aliens come to Earth, and they start digging around, and they find all these different artifacts. And like you said, they found like an early model of a car, which a car nowadays compared to what a car will look like.
You're just making a watchmaker analogy. You're saying, well, if something is sufficiently complex or whatever, then it necessitates a designer. So
no, that's not what I'm saying.
Finish your analogy then. Yeah, the aliens find a car.
I mean, the aliens can find anything. My point is if they found a creation, right, something that is obviously being created by something, just because the thing doesn't work well doesn't mean it wasn't created. Just because, a Model T compared to a Tesla, right? It's not even comparable. Model T is a piece of junk in comparison. Terrible, terrible creation.
What would something that's made? Yeah, I know. But what would something that's made by somebody or something that is perfect look like?
Nothing, because I don't think. I think the idea of perfection is I think that's a human idea.
Do you believe in a perfect creator?
No. Oh. I believe in a creator, but I don't necessarily think that creator is perfect. I don't even necessarily think the creator I'm talking about is the be-all, end-all, God, whatever you want to call it. I just think this place that we're in was designed because, to me...
Sure, that's fine. That's
something
fine.
Can't come from nothing. That's my idea.
I don't think anything comes from nothing either. But... So what would be your strongest case, and not by like arguing by way of an analogy, because these design analogy arguments, I think are pretty poor because they use things that we know are designed that we know aren't products merely of nature. And then they say, well, we would know that something that we already know is designed. Therefore, nature has design aspects of it. I think that that's very weak. So what would be your best argument or evidence in nature that we can find of design?
The mathematical...
The constants?
Things that we find in nature, like the Fibonacci. And we see that in like... Well, what do they say? See it in like,
I think
like
I think Fibonacci is kind of a weak one, but
I mean, it's there's or like, you know, there isn't any hard evidence for creation. Otherwise, everyone would believe in it. That's the case. What it comes down to.
Fairly
is,
wise take, yeah.
Is interpretation of the world around you and. Mm-hmm. I just can't. I find it hard to fathom that people can look around at this world where, yeah, it's not perfect, but it's the best. It's literally the best place in the universe for us. Like,
we don't know that because we don't know what other places. I mean, the sample we have is so incredibly minuscule. I mean, we know virtually none of the characteristics or properties of any bodies outside of our solar system. We know of about 5,000 exoplanets, And we know that some of them are within what we would consider a habitable range, but we know nothing else about virtually any of them.
But I think the fact that we haven't, you know, unless you believe in UFOs, we haven't been contacted by any intelligent life, that kind of it leads you to believe that there's nothing else out there, to the best of our knowledge. So if anything, it's wiser to assume, until we do get confirmation that there's intelligent life out there, that this is the place that was created.
That is, no, I think that's deeply fallacious. It's, I don't know if it's exactly arguing from ignorance or a shifting of the burden of proof. I think it's really both, because you're saying the original claim is this place is special, and until somebody else can tell me that some other place out there exists that is as special or better, then I am justified in my claim that only this place is, and that really isn't how it works.
This place clearly is special, though.
I do think so. But like, let's just think of the numbers. In this galaxy, there are 400 billion stars, and this star has, I mean, if we include moons, let's just pick a round number and say there are approximately 10 bodies that, like, because we don't know, I can't imagine a way that life could exist on like a gas planet. So let's just say there are 10 bodies that could have been, that life could have existed on. Well, we may find, the Europa Clipper may find that there actually is life on Europa, that moon, but so far we really only know of Earth. But Mars had conditions that would have worked for life a very long time ago. But anyways, that's kind of beside the point. This star has about 10. So let's take the number of stars in the galaxy, and we don't have to pick all of them. We can just say half of them, or only 10% of them, are going to have planets around them. So we're going to multiply 10 by 40 billion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're up to an absurd number already. But then we know of the existence of around 200, I think, ish billion. Or actually, I get this one confused. Does our galaxy have 200 billion stars, and there are 400 billion galaxies in the observable universe? Or is it 400 billion stars and 200 billion galaxies? I don't remember. But either way, we're dealing with numbers that are multiple tens of trillions of potentially habitable bodies out there. So if we just say that Earth is unique, well, even if we're going to say it's a 1% planet, or even a 0.01% planet, we're going to end up with hundreds, maybe thousands of candidates in our galaxy. Yeah. We're going to end up with millions of candidates in the observable universe.
So where are they all?
Well,
that's a lot.
Like,
you know?
I know, but for us, we're a pretty advanced civilization. This is just the Fermi paradox all of a sudden. But for us, I mean, we're a fairly advanced civilization. We're a fairly advanced civilization, perhaps, but the total extent of our existence is 130-140 years worth of radio waves. So our existence into the known universe extends 150 light years in all directions. That's nothing. You're only going to run into a tiny handful of stars with that case. And with the resolution problem of looking at, like, when we try to observe even the closest stars, we can't take pictures or anything like that of the planets that orbit the closest stars. We can't do anything like that. So the resolution to be able to find it, because there was complex intelligent life on this planet a million years ago. But that would be completely unknowable to anything unless it was in our solar system. And then there's the problem of, you know, the ability to travel. Maybe aliens will figure out how to teleport instantaneously. But even if they had the ability to do that, there's such a tremendous sample of bodies in the universe that the odds that they would, you know, land here, it's like the most insane lottery of all time. It's like picking out the correct grain of sand in the empty quarter desert.
Yeah, but again, this is like you're applying like human restraints to it. You know, if
no, I went like, as far as to say they can instantaneously travel.
Okay, but the you know, you said the idea of we've only had radio waves getting sent out for what 150 years or so.
Yep.
If that.
Yep.
It's not a long time at all. Fair enough. But you look at human civilization. That's, you know, modern civilization's like some 1,000 years old, like 6,000, 7,000 years old or so, you know, rough estimates. Well, that is such a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of time in the scope of the universe. The universe is 13 billion years old, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, again, this literally just go back to the Fermi paradox of, you know, all this time has passed and we've seen how much we can do in 7,000 years. And then in recent history, how much we've advanced is just insane, you know, going from...
Yeah, so it's not...
In the 1800s
I agree that it...
On the moon.
I agree that it doesn't hinge on our ability to find them. It could hinge on their ability to find us.
No, they would be able to find us. They'd know of us.
That's literally what I just said.
If there's intelligent aliens out there, you know, they could be a million years advanced.
Yes.
Billion years advanced, potentially.
Sure.
And by that point, they would quite literally have like sprawled across the whole galaxy. Every corner. Would be
marked, right? Perhaps, but although I don't think that that's necessarily reasonable, but even if that were the case, the universe is so much more vast than that.
Well, let's just keep it at the galaxy then. The galaxy is still very big, but and like you said, in the galaxy, yep. they estimate that there is probably like millions and millions of potentially life sustaining planets.
No, I would wager. Oh, life sustaining. Yeah, millions is probably a good number.
Like millions, and let's just say like five of those managed to get life. By now, or intelligent life. Sorry, by now they would have mapped out the whole galaxy.
And if there are only five in total, I mean, we haven't done that. And I don't know what kind of technology would make that possible, but we'd have to assume that we're not the first. I mean, there's quite a lot of assumptions that go into the main one is assuming that we're not the first, I guess. Sorry, I have the hiccups. But anyways, we are so far from design. So What do you specifically want to talk about?
No, it was mainly just creationism. I mean, I just find it hard to comprehend how like people don't think that this is all just came from nothing.
No, I don't think that it came from nothing.
It says you believe in the Big Bang.
Yeah, the Big Bang didn't come from nothing. The Big Bang is something that the universe does.
Yeah, the universe just does. The universe just does. Like that doesn't. There's nothing in life that leads you to believe that something can come from nothing.
I know, and I don't believe that.
But that is. That's literally what you're saying. You're saying.
No, I'd never said that.
How did the Big Bang happen? Where did it come from? All this energy.
Well, it didn't come from anywhere. Well, it didn't necessarily come from anywhere. There's no logical problem with that the universe just exists, that it is, in a sense, eternal.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So before the universe began expanding, it existed in some sort of other kind of state.
But we just don't know what state that is. We don't know what it looks like.
Not currently, because we don't have physics for that in the same sort of way that we don't have physics for what happens inside of a black hole. But it's not like we don't know that black holes exist, and it's not like it's permissible to that doesn't really give you permission to say that inside of black holes that's where real magic occurs. The reason that somebody would say that that falls apart to me is the same reason that it falls apart, that there must be some kind of supernatural event that precedes the expansion of the universe that we see today.
Oh, it doesn't have to be supernatural.
Like, no, it doesn't have to be that.
You know, supernatural or woo-woo or any of that.
Yeah, it could be aliens. Like, we could live in a simulation, but we don't have evidence of that either. Like, we have a missing piece. We don't know what the shape of the missing piece is, and we don't know the shape of the hypotheses either. We don't know what a God-shaped piece looks like. We don't know what a alien-shaped piece looks like. And I know you're not one of these people, but when people, you know, come in here and they say to me, "That's right, it goes in the square hole," I'm like, "No, you don't know that it goes in the square hole."
That's just assumptions,
right?
A big thing for me, another big one is the, you know, the whole missing link.
Oh, it's not missing.
Is it not? Have you figured it out?
Yeah, we know of many of them. Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't know what it is. We don't know what actually happened.
What does that mean?
I mean, I think we're talking about the same thing here. We don't know. Not the missing link. The missing link as well. I guess I've got 2 points here. The missing link and just abiogenesis, right?
Well, that's, I mean, life, those are completely different. Springing
out of nowhere. And then human life, just out of nowhere, the brain size just doubles, and we become conscious, and we become intelligent.
And we become intelligent. It doubled, well, users. No, we were, I would say that even rudiment, certain, how do I say it? I would say that, for example, every mammal, and I would argue every bird has some sophisticated sense of consciousness or awareness. I don't remember exactly what you said, like became aware. They don't necessarily have metacognition. That's different. But no, I don't think that would be unique to humans, as in Homo sapiens. I think Neanderthals would have had that, but they were humans. I think Homo erectus would have had that. They are technically humans. Because they're part of the genus Homo.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I don't see it. We are different, and our evolution did get, not exactly put into hyperdrive or whatever, but I don't actually find that to be really all that mysterious.
What, that we just happen to be the only intelligent tool using.
Birds use tools. Other primates use tools. Elephants, elephants can learn on their own to use tools.
You know, every other animal on this planet is just nowhere near comparable to the Homo sapien. We are so.
There's no animal comparable on this planet to the blue whale, in the sense that we decide that the characteristics of the blue whale are extraordinary characteristics. We're also the only species on the planet that takes videos of ourselves twerking, and the only member of our species that deliberately goes around exterminating members of its own kind for no reason. We're the only species that invents alcohol and then drinks it and then gets behind motor vehicles and then dies by the truckload. We are simultaneously the most intelligent and the most catastrophically stupid species on the planet.
Well, that's a good way to put it. We're catastrophic. No other animal has the ability to manipulate the world in the way that we do. Not even close.
Yeah, so and, like, and would you
literally shoot rockets into the sky and send other members of our species beyond this world and to land on other worlds?
Yeah, and to shoot rockets into the sky and then have those rockets do a U-turn and incinerate all complex life on the planet, which we have the capability of doing. And it seems would you give a kid a gun, like a little, like a 5-year-old kid a gun?
Again, me personally, I would not, but there's a lot of
people. But humans have chosen to do the equivalent of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how wise that is. We'll see. Maybe this is the resolution of the Fermi paradox. Any sufficiently complex civilization, inevitably, whether it's intentional or not, destroys itself. So, not that I want to go back to that.
No, we won't. But the idea that because we have the ability to do crazy things like that, like, you know, potentially nuke ourselves if we go into a nuclear war, that doesn't mean like, oh, a creator would never allow its own creation to destroy itself.
Well, I wasn't really talking about a creator. I was just trying to downplay the intelligence of humans a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. Look at what we're doing right now, you know. I'm guessing by your accent you live in
America. Yeah, destroying the environment and ourselves.
No, but I'm talking about specifically right now what we are doing. You know, we're on this live stream in front of 160 other people. You're thousands of miles away from me. You know, we've no idea who each other are, but here we are communicating in front of others. Others are listening in.
That's fascinating.
On this weird little box. And, you know, I can see you. You can see me. Well, you can see my logo. But
yeah. Okay, so like let's imagine this in the animal kingdom somewhere else. Like, have you ever looked at a termite colony before?
Yeah, I've seen termite mounds before on holiday.
Okay, so what if, termites suddenly? Now they don't do this, but what if termites started? They had this weird, there was this weird thing about them where they were incapable of stopping building their colonies vertically until inevitably, it's like building, like a sandcastle can only be too tall. Eventually, the integrity of the materials is overcome by its own mass and it collapses. What if termites just for some reason started behaving in that way where they can't stop building up? And inevitably, every single time it collapsed their mound and it like caused the colony to, if not all perish, then be complete, like have to start over completely over and over again. We would look at their ability to do something complex and fascinating and be kind of mesmerized by that. But as impartial observers, we would look at that and be like, you know, if termites weren't so fucking stupid, they would stop at point X. Now, what I think is that human beings, in a sense, are kind of like that. There are innumerable things that we can point to and say that that is incredible. And I do think we are the smartest species, and, you know, whatever else. But I think we're also building vertically with no regard for our own well-being in certain senses. In what we do. So I just think that there's this idea that I don't know what else to say about it. I'm just trying to sell short the hyper intelligence thing just a little bit. What's up?
Do you mean like, yeah, technology is amazing, but it could lead to our own downfall, that sort of thing, like AI?
Yeah, so what would be, I guess I did kind of lose my train of thought here. So what would actually be smarter? Avoiding sowing the seeds of our own destruction, or, well, I guess instead of, I should say it more simply, don't you think it would be smarter or wiser to avoid sowing the seeds of our own destruction? Like, why don't other animals do all these incredible things? Well, maybe to them, I mean, they don't literally think this, but maybe to them, they're like, yeah, why would we waste our energy and resources and whatever doing all of that stuff? I mean, like, to go back to what you're talking about, you and me having this conversation, this does absolutely nothing for our survival. And so there's this really funny quote in a Steven Pinker book where he talks about, I don't remember what it's exactly about, if it's about human-animal cognition, but he brings up this point for a chicken, like a hen, all it does is sit on its egg all day. And people are like, oh, that seems kind of silly that it would just do that. But from the hen's perspective, it can't imagine anything more important or precious than sitting on an egg, because the chicken is interested in winning the game of life. And as successful as we are, we kind of get in our own way of this whole winning the game of life thing. Anyways, go on.
It's because we've already kind of, in a sense, won the game of life. If like, you know, the game of life for 99%, well, more than that, for literally every other species on this planet, the game of life is eat, sleep, reproduce. That's it. That is it. That is the goal of every single animal on the planet. Mm-hmm. But for us, we bypass that to the point where these are no longer goals in our daily lives. So it's allowed us an ability to ponder about the world around us and to, yeah, like, make these pointless inventions, because they are pretty pointless, like you said. These things serve no greater purpose to mankind or progressing. Well, I guess they do progress mankind in a certain way, but not in the way that is actually fundamentally important, which is just to survive.
Yeah. I mean, the point of the exercise is to, like, I'm not an anti-humanist or anything like that. I'm not telling you that we aren't intelligent, but what I try to do is divorce myself from human preference and then think about, if I were a different species looking at humans, how much of what they do would I say, what the actual fuck are they doing? You know? And I think that there's kind of a lot of that. And so then I wonder, if our idea of intelligence or whatever is just sort of an innate bias, you know? Like, for example, this is going to be, like, completely kind of out of left field, but when people talk about men are objectively better at sports than women, and it's like, well, I mean, okay, but what if we, isn't that kind of because we've decided that, and it's complete, like, athletics is completely subjective. We've decided that feats of strength, for the most part, play into almost everything about sports. Now, there are some other things where it's like precision, like archery or whatever, where it's not necessarily about strength. But what if we decided that sports was about perhaps something like flexibility or whatever? Well, then on average, if we, like, literally reconstructed our ideas about what we find to be compelling and interesting and entertaining sports, we're based on different metrics, then it's very easy to think that we would consider women to be more athletic than men. You know, there's men's and women's gymnastics and they do different events, but I genuinely don't think that men could do women's gymnastics as well as they do for quite a lot of the things that they do. So that's just an example of, well, we think we've created an objective and, like, quantitative system of analysis, but I think it's really just a qualitative system of analysis.
But it does have a basis in the sense that feats of strength, again, it goes back to survival. You know, there's a reason that men went out and did all the hunting, because they were naturally the more gifted, athletically proficient hunters. They were faster and stronger. So, and that plays into sports nowadays. It's about being who's faster and stronger.
Sports is almost like, well, yeah, but that, like, if that were true, that would just be part of the narrative of how we ended up with the bias that we have toward thinking these, like, we prioritize or value this thing over the other thing.
Yeah, but but on that point, do you not think it's strange that genders have these roles? Like, why has nature led different genders to have different roles and different capabilities and different attributes? What's the purpose of that?
Well, I mean, as far as purpose goes, like, I don't think there's teleology in nature. It's just what works. And Yeah, the origins of sexual reproduction is really fascinating. I mean, there are organisms that can reproduce on their own and do sexual reproduction at the same time. Most of those are pretty simple organisms. But if we look at like vertebrates, like, you know, there's the male and female fish. Now for them, they're kind of indistinguishable to us for in a lot of cases. Because one just literally needs to produce eggs and then the other just needs to be able to fertilize them, and they're kind of deadbeat parents. So how much specialization beyond the reproductive organs does there even need to? Oh, he left. He didn't get kicked out, did he? Because I wasn't looking at my screen. I hope not. I hope somebody didn't like report that or something. But anyways, just to finish my point, there doesn't need to, like, you don't see strong sexual dimorphism in fish, at least not that I'm aware of. I mean, there are examples like anglerfish. There's an incredible amount of sexual dimorphism. The males are these really tiny things and the females are pretty big. And after mating, the male bites onto the side of the female and she sucks his life force. He basically acts as a placenta. Well, not even a placenta, more like a yolk. And they live in the, what do you call that, the baffled zone or whatever, where there isn't a lot of light. So he serves as the nutrition for growing the offspring, literally. But then for other organisms, it's different. Birds do a lot of co-parenting, and so there's a little bit of sexual dimorphism. Well, there's extreme sexual dimorphism in some birds, like with peacocks, but that's just because that's about sexual selection. Which isn't really, I wouldn't consider it the same thing at all as like roles or whatever, because that's just about selecting traits. It's completely divorced from like parenting or whatever we mean when we say roles here. But like with bald eagles who co-parent, the males are a tiny bit, actually, I think females are a little bigger. I don't remember. But like with bald eagles, it's very, very difficult to tell the difference between them. Now with mammals, I mean, it depends on the mammal species, but pretty much exclusively in mammals, if there is sexual dimorphism, the males are bigger than the females. And that's different for different reasons. For elephant seals, it's because whoever the dominant male is just basically wins the right to breed with all of the females. And so there isn't really female selection in elephant seals. It's really just about male fighting. As far as like wolf packs, it's different than that. As far as lion prides, it's a little bit like that. I don't know how many breeding males there are with lions. But if we shift to primates and we get all the way down to humans, why, I guess, this is weird because I'm not talking to anybody. I'm talking to myself, but I'll just try to wrap this up. When I think of like gender roles, I basically just think of like parenting roles with regard to like humans or whatever. So women on average are more empathetic and more caring. They are better caretakers, so on and so forth. So like, why would that be? Well, they're literally the ones that have to carry and nurse the child, and they would carry that child around with them. The argument that it's all about because the men would go out and do all the fighting and the foraging and the hunting, that's not universal. Not among humans, at least. How universal would that be in our like proto-human ancestors, like going back to Australopiths? We just don't know, I guess. And that would be instructive in like trying to find out why. But I don't know. At this point, I've talked myself into oblivion, where I don't really have anything else interesting to say.